This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase.
Welcome to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. This is the annual Stories from the Season series. As we have done in years past, I like to bring on friends and former guests or just good hunters, but they all have one thing in common, and that is a great story from the season. This year, we teamed up with the guys at Western Hunter to help share some great stories. If you aren't familiar with Western Hunter, you need to check them out. They produce Western Hunter magazine that has fantastic stories, product reviews, and they also have a great TV show on the Sportsman's Channel and their own podcast. In addition to the magazine and show, this year Western Hunter is launching a film tour that you can enter your hunting film to win some great prizes. Go back and check out episode 183 with Chris Denham, or hop over to westernhunter.net to hear all the details and how to enter. Let's jump right into these great stories from the season. Welcome to the first Stories from the Season of 2021. So I'm very excited to have my good buddy Jeff Lund on here, the mediocre Alaskan, for the first show. And I had Jeff come on. He's had a really cool season up to this point, and he's got an even cooler season coming up. And I thought it'd be fun to have him come on here. Originally, I was going to have him come on and talk about a bear hunt, which we do talk about. And then I started seeing some of the other amazing hunts that he had going on this year. So it made it even more exciting to get Jeff to come on. And we just talk about a lot of stuff Alaska, right? So it's cool to get him on here. So the way I kind of did the stories from the season this year, and you'll hear this progress throughout the year or throughout the, you know, September through December, was I wanted to start out and sort of highlight some of the hunts that friends and people have done early in the season. So some spring bear stuff, we've got some Barbary sheep stuff coming up, things that were done in the, you know, after December of last year. So the first few shows are set up that way for those early season hunts, because I think a lot of times those get overlooked and everybody gets so excited about elk and, you know, mule deer season coming in that we overlook some of those super cool spring hunts. And I definitely wanted to highlight some of those. So we do that today. My good buddy Jeff Lund, I'm really excited for you guys to listen to this show. I'm also excited. You probably heard the intro change. We got Western Hunter magazine, Western Hunter, as the sponsor for this show, or for the series, rather, for the Stories from the Season series. And then, as always, this show is always sponsored by Go Hunt, Elk 101, and Vortex Optics. And if you stick around at the end of the show, we have some great discounts. If you're not familiar with that, you can use the code Rookies at any of those, and you have some savings through those companies, through those sponsors, and more to follow at the end of the show. All right, here we go. Let's jump into this with my friend Jeff. Hey, what's up, dude?
Not too much, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm jealous right now. So I wanted to record this podcast about a bear hunt, and then I started seeing this beautiful velvet Sitka deer on your Instagram. I text you today and say, well, what do you want to talk about? And you're like, hey, man, I'm packing for this mountain goat hunt. And then yeah, what?
It's been pretty pretty crazy. March, I had the caribou hunt up in Fairbanks, and then April got a brown bear down here. I live in Southeast Alaska, so those two hunts were, you know, kind of expensive to fly out somewhere, but I didn't draw any tags in the lower 48. So I figured I could spend, you know, $1,000 if I would have drawn an elk tag, or I can spend $1,000 an airplane ticket up to Fairbanks to hunt with a couple of my buddies. So
yeah,
now that August 1 started, we got mountain goat, and we got Sitka blacktail deer, and then black bear starts on the fall hunt starts on September 1st. So
awesome. And yeah, those are all just resident. Is it over the counter or do you have to draw that stuff?
The brown bear, the caribou, and the mountain goat are registration hunts. So it's pretty much over the counter, but you just have to go there and you have to, you know, fill out some stuff. The caribou was a resident only quota hunt. They split up that quota 5,000, I think it's either 5,000 or 3,000 animals in September, August, September. And then they do a winter hunt too, just to keep the tundra from getting too torn up. A lot of people take their ATVs out there and tear up that habitat that herd has recovered from. I think it was down in like the 7 to 10,000 in the 80s. But then in the 90s, they really put a concerted effort into making sure that the habitat was good and the predators were down. So now it's, I think it's up to like 70 or 80,000 caribou. So
wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. Conservation at its best right there.
Absolutely. So,
well, Jeff, okay, sorry, no introduction, but I just hit record real early. So welcome to the Stories from the Season series, the Backcountry Rookie Stories from the Season. What I like to do on these is invite friends and former guests, you know, guys like yourself, to come on and just tell a story from the season that they had. And to me, it sounds like, shoot, we could almost talk about the whole series with you.
Well, that's Alaska, man. There's a lot of tags. And if you do it, then there's just so many opportunities. You know, a lot of people dial in and they're just, you know, blacktail hunters. And you can have a lot of fun doing that. You get the most areas, you get at least four tags. So you can hunt two in the alpine in August and then two in the rut. And, you know, that's, you know, 4 month season, four tags. That's a pretty good year. So
pretty good year.
Some people really dial
fishing
in
on the side and everything else that goes along with Alaska, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I really am putting forth the effort this year to make sure I'm making the most out of all the opportunities that I have. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's good too, because you have a platform, right? And we'll get to that here in a minute. And you have a voice in the hunting industry and just being able to talk about those opportunities and how to take advantage of those opportunities. It's great. So now that you've actually gone through the process and you've seen those caribou type hunts and, you know, the resident only stuff, I think it gives you a great opportunity to be able to talk about that over the counter, the draw, the fishing, all the different things that go along with that. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's pretty important. Alaska is such a big state that, you know, I don't really know any of the politics of stuff that's going on up north in the state, but it's still Alaskans. And so just to, you know, be conscious of what the caribou herds are doing up there. You know, I think it's part of my, I wouldn't say responsibility, but, you know, something I should be aware of. I know in some states, the fishermen have no idea what the hunters are doing and vice versa. You know, you have all these issues that are really important to you, but as an outdoors person, you know, looking at, well, I'm not really big fisherman maybe, but this is what's going on with them. So maybe I should be involved and at least be aware of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's cool. Well, let's do this. Why don't we try? So I try to keep these stories from the season relatively short, just, you know, because I'm thinking guys are listening to them while they're on the road, whatever. Let's see what we can do. Let's talk a little bit about your bear hunt. Talk a little bit about your deer hunt. And then we'll hear a little bit about this upcoming goat hunt that you got. You're at home packing for that one right now, right? So it's like,
yep, got everything washed on your mind, dried out, and yeah, trying to figure out what the weather is going to do. But so opening day was August 1st, and kind of the big ticket item for Southeast Alaska is going up into the Alpine. A lot of people get flown into lakes, and or just hike up. And so the Alpine deer hunt, that's what you see a lot of the content being made in this time, you know, people getting flown out and doing that. So I was up on a mountain for the opening day, and then just beautiful for the first, you know, maybe half hour or so. So by 5 o'clock, it was totally fogged in, couldn't see anything. So I came back off the mountain and a storm rolled in. So another opportunity that you have is blacktail at a lower elevation, like up underneath the clouds. We don't have the same sort of migration as you see with elk and mule deer and a lot of those species down south. So you have some deer that never get above 1500 feet in elevation. You know, they never really leave the timber. So some of those lowlands can be great. Some clear cuts can be great habitat or even muskegs. So I went to a spot that looked like it had some great opportunity, and I just walked along an old logging road, and there's so much texture. It's so hard to see, you know, right over the next little ridge, there could be something. It's the same sort of thing, like a mule deer program that, you know, you're looking out, everything's fine. You go 50 yards to your right, you glass again, and all of a sudden you see underneath that rock, there's a mule deer. And the same thing can happen with blacktail. You get on the other side of a little bit of a fold and you see something that's bedded down. And so I saw a buck and it was feeding, and I didn't have a shot. I got down and I could feel the water soak through my Gore-Tex pants, but I'm thinking, I'm going to shoot this thing. It's going to be over. And it just doesn't give me a shot. So I'm laying there and you're not moving. And so you're getting wet and cold. And this isn't like the down south shower warmth. You know, if you get the monsoon rain in Tucson, it's nice. It's bath water. This is, you know, 58 degrees and rainy. So after a while, you know, my hands started to get numb. But the thing just wasn't coming out. I decided to try to make a move on it after waiting for about an hour and a half, and just to see if it was there, if it had escaped out the backside, because I hadn't seen it for a little bit. It had bedded down and I just lost track of it. So I decided to make a move, and I'm hiking down into this old clear cut, and it's just berry bushes chest high. I'm thinking, man, this is unbelievable black bear territory. And here I am sneaking through this, you know, in the rain, there's a little bit of wind. Oh man, I could definitely be, you know, jumping a bear. That's not what I want to do. The season doesn't open till September 1st, but you know, I don't want to, you know, surprise anything, you know, if the sow and cubs are right in there. So I go down into this little V, and I'm coming back up to this little knoll, and right on the other side should be where the deer was. So I'd cut from 300 yards to what I thought would be, you know, 25, 30, 40.
Was this archery hunt?
No, this was a rifle, but, it was just like when it went to bed, when I was laying down there looking at it, and it was feeding, and then I lost track of it, went into bed. I couldn't see exactly where it was. And so rather than wait for it to maybe feed out again, I tried to just cut the distance, get myself a better angle. Gotcha. Or a different angle. Okay. And I was cold. I couldn't feel my fingers. So I was kind of a desperation move.
Sure.
So I get to the top of this little knoll. I look over and it's bedded right there. And so, you know, it's been raining. I popped the covers off my scope. And, you know, when you look through the scope and it's like a little bit foggy and there's just wetness in there, and like instinctively, like I don't shoot standing a whole lot, but this is a short shot. When you try to squint to get like a better view of whatever it is on the other side of the scope, like you kind of lean forward a little bit. So when I shot, I freaking scoped myself.
Is that the mark right there?
Yeah. I got three marks on my face. The first one was from that. So the buck kind of falters a little bit and then falls, and then there's a little bit of commotion as it's finally dying. So I was like, dude, got it, awesome. Now I'm on the top of this knoll, and I got to get down this steep little chute to get down to it. So I slid down, kind of grabbing on to the stems of the bushes, get down to the bottom, and I've got a tiny little tributary creek bottom thing to go through, and I can't see the bottom because it's just so thick with Devil's Club. Come up out of that, I see the deer, and I look to my right, and there's a black bear about 15 yards from it. So the deer is in between. I'm 15 yards from the deer. The bear is 15 yards from the deer on the other side. It was like this, who's going to claim this thing? Oh my gosh. So I yelled a profanity just out of not trying to scare it off. I just wasn't expecting it. And the bear looks at me, and I look at it, and it runs off. But I don't like hang out right next to the deer yet. I'm just kind of waiting to see what happens. And if it was a grizzly bear, I'd have been out of there. No sweat. But I'm thinking, all right, well, we don't have grizzly bears on this island. We don't have brown bears on this island. And I, you know, grew up in Southeast Alaska. So I've been around black bears since I was, you know, six. And you can kind of get an idea of the temperament and the attitude. And I've been around some that, you know, that, clench their jaws and make that popping sound. I've had one that rushed me when I was fishing. I had a bunch of fish on the shore and it came at me. It just wanted to scare me off the fish to get it. So I've been, you know, I'm not an expert, I'm not a biologist. I'm not saying this is what anybody should do, but in that moment, I didn't think that it was a runaway type thing. The bear looped around and I saw it again and it poked its head up from the bushes, but it wasn't aggressive. It clearly hadn't claimed the carcass. It hadn't cached it. You know, there was no sow and cubs. So, you know, once it took off again, I just kept talking to it. And for about 5 minutes or so, I just kept talking. Nothing came. So I went in, started processing the deer and got that and hiked it out. And if anybody's hiked out of a clear cut, it's just the worst. You got all these limbs that were cut off, the trees that just kind of lay cross stitched, and you step on one, you can break through, and you know, all of a sudden you got your heavy pack and you're down to one knee, and it's just a huge mess. But it's just that type two fun. It was rainy, it was cold, had the deer, berries everywhere. I'm thinking, man, this bear probably tastes awesome. I might need to come back here in a couple of weeks when the season opens, because this is going to be a good tasting blueberry bear.
Yeah. That's really cool, man. And it just all kind of happened, huh? You dropped down out of the clouds, I guess, out of the fog, and then there you had a beautiful buck waiting on you. So super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing about having a lot of time and having some confidence. So I didn't get anything on the opening day, but you know, storm rolls in, that's fine. Just be patient. You know, so I went out, that was August 3rd that I got it, whatever day that was, that Tuesday, was that Monday or whatever that was, Tuesday. So, you know, like a day in between to kind of recalibrate, it's fine. You don't have to go out for 7 straight days and you don't need great weather. There's always an alternative. It's not the idyllic up on the mountain, you know, beautiful sunrise and all that stuff. You know, it was kind of that nasty, cold, you know, hunt, but a lot of fun, got it done. So now I got the next adventure,
which is mountain goat.
Yeah, registration hunt. There's a permit draw in the area. There's a lot of permit draws that, you know, we don't have preference points, so a lot of people put in for these draws, and you know, some people from out of state draw them and they think, oh my gosh, well, now I got to get a $15,000 mountain goat guide and I got to figure out a way to get to Ketchikan and then get flown out somewhere or up to Anchorage or wherever they're going out of. So some people can't use them, which is, you know, it's fine, I guess, you know, protects the species a little bit. It would be maybe kind of nice if someone does draw that and they can't make it. If they say, hey, I can't make it, then you know, it can go to someone else, but mm-hmm. You know, some of these areas only have 5 or 6 tags. And so if 2 or 3 people can't use them, then, you know, there's not a whole lot of tags left. So I put in for those. It's my daily or my annual contribution. And then I just try to do the registration thing. So
yeah.
A lot more challenging to get out there. I'm gonna have to take my boat for a couple hours to a spot. And then, it's going to be a hike up probably around 15 miles or so, 12 to 15 miles. I figured.
Have you been up in there? Have you gone up that way yet? Or is this kind of sight unseen? You're just going to hunt it.
I was there last year with a buddy and he got a really nice, buck, but we didn't get to the far side of that little range. And so I thought, man, there's gotta be some goats there. When you're hunting in Southeast, 3,000 feet is kind of when you get into goat country. So from 3,000 up is kind of tends to be the measure, and it gets about 3,500. But he shot that buck on the lower end of it. I just wanted to kind of scout for mountain goat and then get him a buck. And we did. It was an awesome deer. So
I've been in that area. Did you see goats when you were there?
Didn't. And so that's kind of the scary part of this is I'm going there hoping for a goat that I hadn't seen, haven't glassed. And, you know, I know a good route to be able to get up there. And I guess worst case scenario, I shoot another nice buck. But
that wouldn't be terrible.
No, that's... But, you know, I think the weather should be okay. And, you know, he kind of planned on it. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for. If we can just get up to the top, if you can glass to the other side of the ridge and then try to make a move. So
also a rifle hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. Rifle hunt. I have some buddies who've done archery everything and they've done archery mountain goat, but this is my first one. I want to make sure that it's
yeah.
It's done.
I would probably do rifle no matter what. That's a lot of climbing and crawling, and that's just terrain I'm not 100% comfortable in. So you got to, so this is like a really cool, epic, this is the kind of thing that's epic adventure. You know, you're taking a boat in and you're going upstream and you're hiking in 15 miles and that's going to be pretty rad.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be great. And that's the nice thing about having a boat. I've talked to some of my buddies on my podcast about like necessary Alaska toys, and they live in the interior. And so, you know, one of them has an ocean boat and a jet boat, and someone else has one of those, you know, like six wheel ATV type things. So you just got to have that in order to go up there and run the caribou program or the moose program. So down here in Southeast Alaska, you got to have an ocean boat that can get you to some of these other areas, because you don't have, it's all islands in Southeast. So you don't have, it's not a matter of just driving somewhere and, you know, hoping to get off the main road, then off this spur and then off this spur and this spur far enough back that you're going to have it to yourself. Like there's not a lot of spurs. You just have the road and the spur, and that's about it. So to have an ocean boat to be able to go back somewhere and anchor up and paddle to shore and then, you know, just hike up the timber to get back up in there. That's it's an adventure, but it's just kind of part of the program. It's an expected thing to have to do or encounter.
I'm going hunting today. Well, get the boat, get all this other stuff, right? Like it's part of the packet list, I would think.
Yeah,
part exactly. of the program. Yeah. Well, how about the spring bear hunt? Because that's originally my idea with this was these first few stories from the season. I wanted guys from the spring hunt, you know, to be able to bring them on and talk about some of that stuff while these August hunts and September hunts were developing. You killed a really, really nice brown bear. And that was one of the first ones that I thought, okay, I'm going to try to get Jeff on for that, for one of these early ones. What do you got on that? Let's talk about that one a little bit.
That one's funny because it's just kind of a standard little, not a big deal.
No story behind it, huh?
I think it was April. And on Revilla Gigado Island, which is where Ketchikan is, there's no brown bears. Prince of Wales Island Unit 2 also doesn't have any brown bears. So it's pretty nice that, you know, when you are deer hunting or black bear hunting, you don't have to worry about them. But if you are targeting them, then you got to figure out where they're going to be. So a buddy of mine has done extensive hunting and trapping, and he, his girlfriend wanted to get a bear and he wanted to get a bear maybe. And I was like, I'll go, you know, he said, well, all right, get your permit. Let's do it. So, it took me out. We stayed at a Forest Service cabin. We took his boat and then we just cruised around some inlets that are attached to the mainland. And you know, we saw one the first night and one black bear the first night, and then the next day we just kind of cruised the inlets and then pulled up and saw one. And it's a pretty extreme area. It's not a huge tidal flat, so we kind of nosed in and the thing was just eating clams, and we just kept going and it didn't spook or anything. So we got pretty much to shore and, you know, got in the little raft to get all the way to the shore, and then we're just sneaking around in the woods trying to flank it, which is hilarious because you're sneaking around in brown bear territory. Like you're in this thick wood trying to keep hidden from the bear that's out there, but all the while you're thinking, you know, am I going to come up on something? You know, the wind was perfect for us, which means that, you know, we could be spooking a bear. So, you know, we looped around and it was still just eating clams. And my buddy's girlfriend, I was like, hey, you want to shoot it? She said, no, you go ahead. Are you sure? Because, you know, it wasn't a huge bear, but, you know, it was my first brown bear. And it had the telltale features of what I was looking for. We looked at it and it had a little bit of a hump behind its head, had a pretty big looking head, looked like it had a valley between the eyes. And so those are the things that you look at if you're looking at a boar or sow. And so I fired one warning shot. And then it was kind of running toward the woods, and it was just kind of looking around, and it was, you know, not just look confused. It looked like it hadn't really been used to people or seen people much, which was kind of cool. And then it slowed a little bit, still looking around curious. And then I shot it and dropped it, and ended up being a sow. Just, we walked up to it and like rolled it over, and it had the huge bald patch It was like it had just woken up from hibernation. And the teeth were brown and really worn down. And when I took it into Fish and Game to have it sealed, the teeth that they usually take for samples were totally gone. I mean, this thing was crazy old. And we kind of joked that maybe it was just, it was so old that it was surprised that it even woke up from hibernation. You know, this was April and most of the other bears were already out. We saw a couple later on that day that were much bigger and healthier and had already started to put on some more fat. And this thing was lean. But it was awesome. Just, shot that in the morning. It was a beautiful day, sunny. And then, all right, there you go. We had just eight and then, ended up going back into town. And that was that.
You make it sound unexciting, but I'm certain that that was probably a very exciting, it just, even just seeing one out there to people that don't live in Alaska, right? Eating clams and all of that, man, that would just be super incredible to even witness.
Yeah. I think part of it too, is being from the boat makes a big difference. There was another little inlet that we saw, a sow and three cubs, which when you're in a boat, you know, and one of the cubs stood up and it was super cute, you know, because brown bear are cute when you're in a boat.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're out in the water a little bit. So, you know, if it had been a river, then that may have been a different story. We had to get past it. But you're just floating in the ocean, it's a sunny day, and you're watching these bear just eat some grass on the shore. It's just super awesome. Super
that
cool.
Is super awesome.
But it would have been a harrowing experience if we'd have been on shore with them and then we saw them. So
no real pack out, I guess. You just put it all in the boat and take it back down river and done.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it was actually out in the ocean. So like it was all
not even down the river. Yeah.
Not even down the river. Yeah. It was super easy. It was kind of a heavy hide and rinsed it off a little bit, but, yeah, super, super quick, pretty easy. And
yeah, very cool.
No big deal.
Very cool. Did your friend's girlfriend, did she end up getting one later or no?
No, they've gone out a couple of times. She's definitely in the category of people who want to get the right one. She shot mountain goat and deer, and she shot a real nice blacktail to start up this season. So, you know, they get out so much and they've done so much that it's that tag is a one every 3 years. You can get it over the counter registration. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be, if it's going to be the bear that you're going to have to wait 3 more years to shoot another one. For me, I was like, any bear, sweet, let's go.
Yeah.
And then for her, I think she's, you know, if I'm going to have to wait 3 years to shoot another one, I want it to be a really special bear. Or if it's the only one she ever shoots, she wants it to be real special.
Yeah. So what about your mountain goat? Is that a once every few years or how often does that come around for you?
That's a registration that I can get every year.
Okay.
I got one last year. Well, I got the registration tag last year, but I didn't actually get a mountain goat. So if you are hunting out of state in this area, you have to get a guide for that. So,
and that's that $15,000 upcharge. And then
what's
that tag cost? What's that cost for an out of state hunter?
I think the license is $150 and then the tag is $300, $450. It's gotta be
okay. That's not bad.
Deer is $300.
So everything's not bad. And then it's like, got to have a guide.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay. That's, and people complain that, well, you know, I've shot Sitka blacktail in area where a mountain goat lives, so I shouldn't have to get a guide, but you know, there's a lot of really qualified hunters. And there's also a lot of people who just want to kind of do it yourself and go out there. And, you know, it's not as easy if someone gets, like lost or needs to be rescued or something like that. It's not as easy as just driving out there.
Right,
you're talking Coast Guard, you're talking helicopters, you're talking, you know, a pretty extensive search, and you're talking about, you know, a lot of people are going to be put in danger potentially if they're hiking into some of these really extreme areas that, you know, it happens to be wet, you know, people get hypothermic during the summer. Like it just, those sort of things happen up here. And so the severity of problem can be pretty big. And so that's why they keep the guide a necessity. It's not the same as like I know down south, there's some talks about how the regulations are to keep the guides in business, or, you know, there's kind of the handshakes and there's this and that. I think up here, it's definitely a safety thing. There's definitely some capable people who hunt deer territory, and there happens to be goats there too. And so in that case, yeah, we'd probably trust those people, but you know, it just,
but you never know who they are when they're coming in from some other state somewhere.
Yeah.
And is that you have to be a registered guide and all that. It isn't like a resident. Is it Wyoming? You hunt Wyoming too.
Yeah.
Is Wyoming where you're supposed to hunt with a resident in the wilderness areas or something?
Yeah. In wilderness areas, it's got to be, I don't think it has to be related. I think it's just resident.
Yeah.
So that helps. But
Alaska is an actual guide, not just a resident.
Yeah. Alaska is an actual guide. If it's second degree kinship, then I think you're good. When Steve Rinella goes up, he hunts with his brother. And so he's able to not have to pay for a guide.
Yeah. Cool.
But,
very cool.
Yeah.
Well, heck man, you got a lot more going on. So there's a possibility to the listeners that we'll hear Jeff back on again for another stories from this season. I really had no idea, man. I follow along on your page. I guess I haven't listened to your podcast in a long time, but I need to get caught up with that. So I'm slacking.
Yeah, there's a lot to do up here. It's pretty crazy, and it's relentless. You know, there's always something to hunt. I think July might be the only month that there's not anything to hunt because the black bear season actually runs like the fall of the previous year into the spring. So it's crazy. There's always something to do, but you know, you still have to do it. You know, we've talked about this before where people are really good at regurgitating the brochure and I can do this and I can do this and there's this, but well, yeah, do you actually do any of that stuff?
Right.
And that's exactly the sad thing.
That is the sad thing. I say I haven't listened to your podcast in a while, but that was a lie, because I just this morning listened to your interview with Corey Jacobson, and that was awesome, man. You guys, that was such a cool show. I thought it was really down to earth and just kind of laid back, and a lot of life stuff in there too, along with hunting stuff, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's such a good dude. I'm glad we finally got to connect.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be, you know, different than, you know, other podcasts that he may have been on, you know, and they kind of get a little bit more behind, because I think he's one of the main things about him and a lot of other people in the industry is just not just the success, but also the person behind him, that authenticity, and you know, what type of person are they too? I think that's always been very interesting to me. So
yeah for sure.
And the mountain goat is $600 for the tag, and then it's $160 for the license.
Yeah, not bad until you get that guide involved, and then that's over at that point.
Yeah. It's rough.
Yeah. Well, good, dude. I think we'll wrap it up. I will likely be in touch with you later on in the year, and I'd like to hear about that mountain goat hunt. So we may have you on later on. So you got it. Like we've mentioned a couple times, you have a podcast and Instagram and all that stuff. What, tell us about that before you hop off.
My Instagram is Alaska Lund. The Instagram for my podcast is The Mediocre Alaskan. The podcast is called The Mediocre Alaskan Podcast. I do a better job of maintaining the Alaska Lund Instagram there. But I have some hunting notes and information at themediocrealaskan.com. Got for the past couple of years, different hunts and kind of and I wouldn't say day by day, but a hunt by hunt recap of the last years of blacktail and bear and stuff. And then my book, A Miserable Paradise, came out in April. You can buy that on Amazon.
A little bit. Plug that. Yeah.
2020, I decided to do a writing project in which I wrote about 5,000 words per month, just about what it's like to live here. A lot of people come up to Alaska and they have fun during their hunt, or, you know, they do the 2-week thing, or they come up and fish. And so there's a lot of content out there about people who come up from the lower 48, and it's awesome content. It's great to see people making it happen, having a lot of fun up there. But I thought that something missing from that was what it was like to actually live in one of these areas. So I just wanted to do kind of a month by month. Here's what we're doing. And happened to be the COVID year. So by the time March rolled around, it became less about just steelhead fishing and shrimping and spring bear hunting, and more about, wait, I'm teaching during a pandemic. This is kind of weird. So it's just a month by month look at 2020 through the eyes of a resident of Ketchikan, Alaska, fishing, hunting, hiking, camping, and then a little bit of kind of what I felt in that moment. I didn't go back and edit based on what I learned in December, I didn't go back to May and say, oh, maybe I'll take this out because I changed my mind. It's like, no, that's
more
how
of
I
a journal kind of a thing. Huh? You just,
yeah.
That's so, really cool. That's a cool, sounds like a cool book. Amazon, you said people can buy it
Amazon,
you get
on Amazon or Kindle. I'm assuming that no bookstores down there have it. We have some bookstores up here that have it, but you know,
yeah,
it's not,
so I should let you know if I walk through Barnes and Noble here in New Mexico and it's all over the shelves. You probably want to know that, huh?
Yeah, I'd like to know that. The distributors are doing that, then I would be expecting a nice check.
Yeah, right. awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. What a cool year. Look forward to hearing about this mountain goat hunt. And to all the listeners, make sure you check it out because this podcast is really cool. Always good topics. There's a lot of stuff about the book on there. I know there was a stretch where you were talking kind of a daily or a weekly thing about the book and a lot of good info. So check out the Mediocre Alaskan Podcast.
Cool. Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me on here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for listening to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. Don't forget to look us up on social media. We are Backcountry Rookies on all the spots, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. And we also have the Backcountry Rookies Nation, which is a private group on Facebook. So thanks to Go Hunt, Elk 101, Vortex Optics, and Canyon Coolers for sponsoring the show. Remember, when you use the code ROOKIES, you get special deals at all of those companies. You get $50 in gear shop credit when you become a Go Hunt Insider. You save $20 on the University of Elk Hunting from Elk 101, 20% off any Vortex apparel. And now you can save 10% off Canyon Coolers. Just use the code ROOKIES at any of those places and get special deals. Thanks for listening. Come back next week. Out of here.